Blog
Talk Radio.
That is the song, Pancho Sanchez. Do you have arrived on? Can I do this, Mom?
Oh yeah, oh sure, go right ahead.
You have arrived on the K-Tops Alive show. I'm just saying, man. I'm trying to. She said me to intro the show, and she's gonna start talking over me before I get intro. Y'all, this is Eric Payne, the son. That's my mom over there on her show. It's K-Tops Alive show, and there you go. Here she is, the one, the only. Here you go. One and the only, K-Tops in Live.
Now you're learning. After all these years, it's clapping.
I love the sound effects on my back.
We have to do the whole thing here, you know. Anyway, Mal Wolf, my friend, our friend. Where you been?
Been doing a lot of things, Kate.
I know. You've been out of the country, in the country, all around the town, and out of the country again.
Yep. Amongst the many hats, I'll start with out of the country.
Uh-huh.
Traveling in Central America.
Mm-hmm.
Little Costa Rica, little Honduras, a lot of Panama.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to create opportunities for American businesses to export products and services, which is, you know, by our congressional and our president's declaration, the number one, but a cornerstone to reviving our economy. You know, we run out of customers and purchases here. We have to do what the other countries that are developing are doing to us in reverse. Send them things that we can manufacture and encourage them to buy from us rather than other countries.
It's
friendly competition. But you first have to go make friends with people to create the relationship to identify distributors of U.S. products and services so that, you know, people who know the territory, know the geography, know the politics, if you will, can be active agents. So, and also, if I may, just to wrap up, to take advantage of the Central American tariff agreements that provided for more reciprocity and Congress people of color. You know, Congressman Rangel, Congressman Meeks, a number of others, the key architects of that. And
they're all involved with that, or were
involved
with
that. In that. Yeah. A couple of them were the determining votes for it to go into effect. And we, I think, as people of color, should support their initiative.
Absolutely.
They go out on a limb to do stuff for us, and it's our obligation to be supportive for mutual benefit.
And you were also very involved, you know, in the Caribbean community, you know, being very much involved with WIBBOS. And the whole advertising, setting that up, and all the stuff that goes along with it. But I say stuff, it's so awesome.
Well, yeah, LIB, BLS, and you know, communications in the diaspora, I think, is key for us.
Right.
Other folks always, you know, all that hyphenated stuff that gets distorted when it comes to us, that's because folks are, if they're Italian, working with folks in Italy to do things in business.
Sure, absolutely.
Working with folks in France, working with folks in Ireland, working with folks in China, you know, and so they keep the communications open for commerce and commercial purposes. We need to be doing the same thing.
Why aren't we?
Well, that's an ongoing effort, but much of it has to do with the lack of education and exposure to our brothers and sisters from other places. And you know, Carib News tried to do that, speaking about the Caribbean. Certainly LIB tried to do that by bringing in multiple stations a couple days a week from the Caribbean.
Right.
So people here.
So how does one go about, I mean, let's, for people who can plainly understand it, entering in trade with someone. And we see we have a caller. How does someone go about entering trade? Like, if I have a small black business here, how do I even make a connection with some of the brothers in the Caribbean or you know, on the continent to establish trade? But something as simple as I got wave caps.
All right.
Brothers in the diaspora need wave caps.
Right.
Now, how can I make that connection for us to begin to do trade and business?
Well, if you will, with my company hat on, mm-hmm. Global Trade and Technology Center, which was congressionally legislated to have a memorandum of agreement with the U.S. Department of Commerce, as
right.
opposed to understanding, commits the United States Department of Commerce to act on our members' behalf as relates to trade opportunities. So if one joins our organization, we can put them directly in touch with U.S. commercial attachés mm-hmm. in any consulate or embassy in the free world that will help them identify people who already are in business distributing their product and service with whom they can partner or at least explore
right.
partnerships. Separate from that, and we always do encourage people to actually go to a country of interest consulate and ask to speak to the business attaché, uh-huh. and that person will identify people in their country who are desirous of...
But it's better to go through your organization because they have an advocate, so to speak, an advocate agency, somewhat as opposed to, you know, an independent individual that's not coming from a Fortune 500 company or very huge investors.
Absolutely, and that's where the congressional legislation and the agreement we have that is actually endorsed by every sitting Secretary of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
That's what it guarantees.
Right.
That rather than having to go to 188 consulates to
right.
determine where you could do business,
right.
you can join our organization and we will do that for the business
yes.
right. mm-hmm.
and determine several countries.
Now, I think I want to follow up on that really quick, but I think this might, is this Wayne? Caller? Caller, speak up, caller. Is that Mr.
Good
Gilman?
Evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. Wayne Gilman.
Can you hear us,
okay.
Can
yeah.
you hear us back, Wayne?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, you
okay.
can.
And Mal will...
Can you hear me?
Here. Yes, we can.
We can
okay,
hear you.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah,
great.
Mal Wolf yeah, is also yeah. here, too, Wayne.
Yeah, I was just saying that voice sounded very familiar. I just, you know, I'm jogging my memory. Gee, that sounds like Mal Wolf. Good evening, Mal.
He can't really hear you right now, but in his headphones, but we're going to work on that. But he said good evening to you, Mal, and so just, he can hear you, but you can't hear him, so you might want to...
Okay.
Holler back.
Brother Wayne, always good to hear from you after our, 40 years in the media business together?
Yeah, it seems like a century at this point. Good to hear your voice as well.
Wayne.
Beg your pardon?
Don't mention my years.
Kay, you're ageless, I tell you. I need to find the secret. And I would have been there in the flesh, but busy day. I really wanted to come over, you know?
Mm-hmm. Listen, I want to say, Wayne, listen, I really
yeah.
say that we all, you know, extend our feelings toward you because of the passing of your father. You know,
right. Thank you. Thank you sincerely. And Eric, thank you. I know I tried a last minute effort to see if, you know, we could probably get him into the veteran system. And that's a story by itself. I think one day, you know, if it's possible, we need to devote an hour to some of the problems that particularly black veterans are going through. And, long story short, you know, my dad put up a good fight. He was 94 years old. And, you know, I have to be thankful that I had him for most of my life. And, you know, I don't think there's anything more sobering, not to put a pall on what's going on, but just to watch someone slowly fade. You know, it's just one of those things. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just grateful to have your support and affection and guidance because the last 4 months have not been easy at all.
Yeah.
Know?
Certainly understand that. Once again, our condolences go out. And, you know, we're going to work on some things in terms of complications that you had and any issues that we're going to bring up. We're going to make sure that we rectify those issues that we're not going to discuss them now. But, you know, we'll talk.
Right.
Handle things properly in terms of how your father was treated and whether his care was optimum that he should have certainly deserved and was his right to receive as a veteran who fought for this
sure.
country. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
Exactly.
We don't respect
Thank
our
you.
And they want to, you know, these idiots want to cut money from support for our veterans. These people fight for, and half the time, the morons that want to cut the money, these guys will dodge military service. And then they want to turn around and cut the benefits for the people that protect them to sit in those offices and make those sleazy deals that they do all the time.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm the type of individual that would like to slap somebody in the lip every once in a while. And I think that if people knew that that was coming and that was imminent, it might change their perspective. It's like kind of like that movie Airplane, when the lady was losing her mind and everybody wanted to slap her into reality, and they had a long line of people wanting to slap her and shut her up. If you knew you had to face your constituents every time you made one of those issues and you looked out for yourself, and you knew you had 300,000 people going wait in line to kick you in the butt, you might change your stilo a little bit, but that's just me. I can imagine.
Well, I agree with you, 1,000%. I mean, I couldn't believe how inept and how far back, that operation at the Veterans Administration, was, And as you said, I mean, there are thousands of people who have given their lives to this country, come back wounded and not getting the kind of, treatment. My dad wasn't even a citizen in 1941, 42 when he was drafted into the U.S. Army, a segregated army at that, And it's just tragic.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to do everything we can to make sure, that he's respected, to say the least. My mind is bouncing all over the place. I wanted to ask you guys about Nigeria, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to get into Nigeria too, all of you, with the kidnapping of these young girls. Now, have you been to Nigeria? No?
No.
There, we've all heard this story.
Right.
It's absolutely horrendous that over 300 and more have been kidnapped in Nigeria. I don't know what can be done about it. The president is sending, a military team, I think a
FBI contingent.
Yeah, they haven't sent any real military contingents yet or anything.
No.
Well, would that even be possible if there's something?
In my limited understanding and experience, it not only would not be possible, it's unnecessary. Nigeria actually provides, I think it's like maybe 60% of the United Nations forces.
Right.
When
wow.
there are issues in Africa, mm-hmm. they are the ones that provide the most soldiers to go into Sierra Leone or Liberia or the Congo or whatever when UN forces are asked to go. So they have a more than adequate military, trained, ready, mm-hmm. and kind of...
they've been one of the more stable. They're one of the more stable, more prosperous nations on the continent of Africa, as I understand, right?
Certainly one of the most prosperous because of
they're not as stable.
All the oil.
Yeah.
But there has always been an underlying tension between the South, which has been Christian, mm-hmm. and the North, which has been Muslim.
I see.
For, since 1100 or since 700 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they've managed, because of the economic viability of the country, to share it sufficiently with leaders coming from the North and South in any administration.
Right.
So that, everybody said, okay, economic stability first, and you're free to be Muslim in the North, Kano, Satanist, whatever. And we're free to do what we want to do in the South, and so on and so forth. However, that was before this new explosion of Islamic fanaticism, where folks are going back to the, oh no, you're either Muslim or you're nothing. There's no, we're not sharing the world with anybody else, and our mission is to eradicate anybody who's not a true believer, which to some degree is what got us in this trouble in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Black
mm-hmm.
Muslims selling black Africans to white Europeans
for slavery.
So the wheel is turned all the way around. So in terms of what can be done about that.
But here's something that, and I don't, not to cut you off, but here's a question that I had, because part of this guy's ranting was against Western education. Don't want to be educated. Now, part of the resistance, mm-hmm. when you get into nations like this and all these nations that have a problem with Western education,
mm-hmm.
there's a certain amount of validity in their opposition to a Western education, because I think that I don't know if there's a certain amount of validity, but if it equates a Western imperialism education from a European perspective, where the education and the implications of that education are that everything that comes out of Europe and the Western part of the world is right, and everything out of other parts of the world is wrong, then that seems, because that seems to be part of the problem sometimes, when some of the issues that some of these leaders bring up, the crazy guy over in whatever country, African country, where they're talking about making homosexuality illegal and wanting to kill people and stuff, and when he got on, he said, well, we don't, you know, some of the practices in the West, we don't go for that.
Rwanda,
wherever that was, as crazy as that sounded. Mm-hmm. But in that, there are certain countries that have now noticed, at least, to say that at least, that the Western, that when the West comes in, when America and Europe comes in and they want to educate people, we want to help you out, we want to hook you up, here, read this book. This is education.
Mm-hmm.
But whose education is it? Whose history is
it?
So, I mean, that maybe that's why some of these nations, and we got to go through a break right now, but I just wanted to throw that out, because that's why when some of these nations, some of these people come out, well, we don't want the Western education and your influence.
Mm-hmm.
Influence of colonialism and all that other stuff. But we'll talk about that on the other side.
Yeah, let's go to the break right now. We'll be right back. Everyone, stay with us. King Council Live here on GoPro Radio Network. Stay with us.
The Interactive Broadcast will bring you a great opportunity. If you have a product or a service, a talent or something important to say, now is your chance to have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out, a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We'll help you to grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 today or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. On Thursday, May 8th, Revolution Books is hosting a major benefit evening featuring a spirited exchange between Louis Lapham, former editor of Harper's Magazine, and Andy Z, spokesperson for Revolution Books. The subject, Revolution, Lessons of the Past, Urgency for the Future. This dialogue will take place on May 8th at 7:30 p.m. at Revolution Books, 146 West 26th Street, and will be a benefit for this bookstore, which is the center of a movement for revolution. For more information, call 212-691-3345. That's 212-691-3345. Call now.
And taking everybody's money. Brandon Temple's out.
Okay, we are back. Kay Thompson Live here. Eric Payne, Mal Wolfhook, and Wayne Gilpin on the phone. And we were talking about the situation in Nigeria and the things leading up to that, how it's happening, what's going to be happening, if anything can be done. So let's continue. Make sure you jump in here, Wayne, okay?
Yeah, Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Right. You know, I'm waiting. I'm listening, though. I mean, I think Eric was making a point with regard to the whole issue of education and what is considered acceptable by African standards.
Right, exactly. But go ahead, you could elaborate on it if you want to take that up, Wayne. I mean, that was just my point, you know. I mean, when these people, you know, we open the door to lunatics, but there is, sometimes they have a point, you know. People, we don't want to have those values that you guys have over there in your country. Whether those values be values based that are morally morally decent or morally corrupt. We kind of set ourselves up to be the moral authority in the world. That ain't, those of us that look like us, no, that ain't nothing but a smokescreen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, no question about it, Eric. The thing is that, I mean, the perception is we are the world cop. I mean, since now the entertainment community and educators here in this country have suddenly embraced this story, I'm not saying that it's not a worthy cause to try to free these young ladies, but, you know, the deal is I think the African culture is so multifaceted. You go to Ghana, which is a very progressive country, Liberia, an American-founded country, Nigeria, you know, I mean, there's so many different cultures, and Mal is right about the different religious beliefs and the impact that has on one's perception, and trying to, you know, get past that smokescreen to bring reality to these people, you know, you don't know. I mean, this nut that is going about kidnapping these young ladies is saying this is an act of God. You know, how dare you impose your beliefs and tell me that I'm doing something wrong, you know? It's just sad. But
you're talking about the extremist Muslim group called Boko Haram, right?
Right. They kidnapped the girl.
Yeah, that they believe that Western education is a sin.
Is that
exactly.
What,
that's what
I know that
here,
was one of their issues
time.
Was were anti-Western education.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I mean,
it really is unfortunate, but the thing is that something has to be done. I mean, look at the Sudan. I mean, that has been going on for years since, you know, way before the Clintons were elected into office, and yet, you know, no one is turning, you know, doing anything definitive to end that crisis there. You have the actor, I don't know, my brain is dead, you know, but the actor who's been exposing it a great... Yeah, George Clooney, I'm sorry. I'm in another planet. But the deal is that, you know, he's been bringing it to the fore, but at the same time, it's not a situation where
actually,
people are very comfortable.
Get to the fore before everybody.
That's right.
Yeah,
and somebody just jumped on board, and Angelina, and all those people, which is great.
And at the end of the day, it gets to be, it has to be homegrown, you know, and home-led. You know, talking about how you can go in and tell 5 million people what to do and expect it to stick if it doesn't come from them and of them and from, you know, people that they revere and respect. You know, one can certainly encourage and incline, but there has to be some. And the irony is, there's so many leaders from these countries are chosen by the U.S. to be brought here and educated, or chosen by England to be brought there and educated.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Or chosen by Saudi Arabia or Kuwait to be taken to their universities and educated, or to Russia to be educated. And so those are the people that East or West, and increasingly now, for the past 15 years since that big Chinese-African initiative where China invested or committed $50 billion to African development, they
mean so they could take the resources and
it's either take or trade. I will have to say from a dispassionate eye that trading, giving people dollars right now for timber or fish or food or gold or whatever you take right now is better than taking everything and saying, don't worry, it's coming.
Well, yeah, no, I'm totally in agreement with that. I am aware that in the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, stuff like that, where a lot of that influx of Chinese workers were coming in to build the infrastructure within that country, that a lot of them, building the infrastructure to that country, that a lot of them, you know, all of the good jobs were for the Chinese workers that they were bringing in and putting up in these housing and stuff like that, and some of the indigenous people in land weren't able to get some of those jobs of working and building these roads and things like that. And I didn't know that was a fact. That was one of the things my uncle, one of the issues that he was, and I'm particularly aware of that because one of the few fundraisers that he had in California that some individuals had it for him because they were interested in investments in there and knowing that he was the expert on Africa, they were trying to him. And this particular family, that with a Chinese woman that was married to an Israeli gentleman, a younger Chinese woman, but her family members had business dealings in the Congo and were trying to get the business dealings to be a part of developing the infrastructure there. So that's why the interest of meeting in Congo came for a good place. So I was exposed to that particular issue. But it was that some of them weren't, the Congolese workers weren't able to get the workers, like the Chinese were.
And that's very true, but essentially that's a deal that has to be negotiated again with the leadership of the country, who even if they put on some fatigues and their hat back, would may have been educated at Princeton or Oxford.
Right, right,
yeah,
exactly.
And to the extent that they don't seem, and one doesn't know, to when they are in a negotiation with any one of the major powers, Russia, U.S., England, France, whoever, mm-hmm. Whoever, mm-hmm. get some consultation, if you will, to help negotiate a better deal for their people.
Right.
That's kind of, you say, okay, we understand this and we understand that, we understand infrastructure and technology, and maybe we understand that bribing is not a bad thing in certain parts of the world and somebody showed up with a Rolls Royce for you.
Right.
But where's your sense of history and legacy where at least you require some basic participation, for job training and job inclusion?
Yeah. Let's go in another direction for a minute. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we're going to be able to adequately talk about this because it just seems like it's so vast that it's almost unsolvable. Listen, Wayne, you're not here for me to pinch you, so don't laugh at me. But anyway.
No. Listen, I'm just as bad. I George Clooney's all over the place, and I couldn't remember his name.
Yeah, but really, it's a shame. It's so depressing. And as a woman,
it is.
Children, it's just super. Nothing can be done. Nothing can be done for these girls. So, it's just frustrating to even talk about it.
Mm-hmm,
but I hope that something will be done, and when something is, we will be reporting on it. But I do want to go in a different direction here, because now you were telling me about some interesting stuff involving C-SPAN and the information coming on C-SPAN. And we were talking, we were saying that a lot of, black congressmen or black people don't really listen to C-SPAN to find out those issues.
A lot of people, period, don't.
Yeah.
Don't listen.
For instance, construction that you were telling me about,
mm-hmm.
and about the different areas in the country that were flooded, like New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
And what's happening with that, and why is it we don't know about this construction in these areas? And using black companies, by the way, which is, what you were talking about.
Company, well, sure. Well, a couple of things. To your point about C-SPAN, what a revolution that was to be able to produce and promote governmental going-ons, period.
Mm-hmm.
People clamored for about a couple of hundred years. They didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Closed doors, we don't know. And then when it was available, C-SPAN 1, 2, and 3, and you could actually see
See the workings of government.
Yeah. Right. And before it gets to be the big deal on the floor, you can see it in subcommittee.
You can see it without the spin.
Right, right.
You can see it where you're watching it. Sometimes you need the spin if you're not educated about the things. But when you get to see that without the spin and see how these people really react,
right,
and see how unimpressive some of these people are when they're making their little speeches on the floor,
right,
or the vitriol with which an idiot like Daryl Issa
mm-hmm.
asks questions against, or they try to make up, or this new gouty moron that they're trying to make the special prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you do get to see really who these people are.
Yeah.
Without the extra someone telling you what you just saw.
Exactly. And the other thing that I find refreshing is that you get to see that everybody isn't crazy, because the folks that they bring to testify, who are military or corporate or in some cases administrative and governmental,
mm-hmm.
in my several years of watching, they're pretty forthright about what makes them sense.
Yeah.
And they're pretty deliberate and fair and reasonably honest mm-hmm. in putting forth solutions that would help a broad base of people. It's just, in spite of their testimony.
Yeah, the people go the other, they do what they want. These are the people who actually have to make it work.
Right.
Who are, like when you go to Washington, there's staff members.
Right.
And there's pages and there's interns. Those are the people who actually make it work. And you have these representatives who come and go.
Right.
And they're trying to shine, particularly nowadays.
Right.
It's all about a gotcha moment or trying to shine and trying to score points or, we don't like the black guy, so whatever whoever's on his team, whatever you guys say, no.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stand here just like they used to back in the day
mm-hmm.
and act like we don't see these accomplishments of Satchel Paige
mm-hmm.
and all these guys, and we're going to stand and turn our back and act like we don't see you regardless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're trying to do now with politics. They're trying to, Chris Matthews puts it very well, that they're trying to put an asterisk next to Barack Obama's presidency. Like, he wasn't the president. It never really happened. I hear you getting audible there, Wayne, because you know what I mean, right? You know how they try to do it. You got 1 minute for a break, but chime in there real quick.
No. I agree with you. The thing is, you talk about the slogan that Fox used about fair and balance. C-SPAN is truly fair and balance. It's pure as the driven snow. I mean, you see things as they are. And, of course, you have those people out there from the conservative party and those who embrace that level of politics will turn around and tell you, well, they're influenced by the government depending upon what it is that you're watching and seeing. But, the sad part about what's going on with Barack Obama, you know, the Republicans want to condemn him for what he's done with the whole health care reform effort. But I don't see anybody not wanting to pony up to the plate in terms of having those benefits removed now.
Okay,
and
wait, put a period in it because we've got to go to a break. And that's a good segue. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break on the K Thompson Live Show here on the GoPro Radio Network. American.
GoPro Radio, the fastest growing network in the galaxy, is leaner and meaner with a new attitude, new technology, and a brand new lineup. Tune in and get wired every Wednesday, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern with the BCS Experience featuring Byron C. Saunders, formerly of New York City, WBAI. Then at 6 p.m., it's the Black Agenda TV Express featuring sought-out political commentator Glenn Ford, formerly of America's Black Forum. Then at 8 p.m., it's time for K. Thompson Live with the legendary radio host K. Thompson of Inner City Broadcasting, WLIB, and her son, renowned actor Eric Payne, who starred in such films as Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Drop Squad, and many more. Then, at 9 p.m., it's Food Wrap, featuring Nina Martell, a.k.a. the unofficial mayor of Jersey City, and former Viacom marketing guru Shauna Glover. Last but not least, at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Sexy Party Show, with the bad boy of dating Mr. Locario of I Love New York fame and his partner in crime, Miles Cunningham. So get wired every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern only on the GoPro Radio Network, www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back on the K Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne. That's my mom over there, co-host. So she's the host. I'm the co-host. Excuse me. And we have Mr. Matt Wolfolk and our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, on the phone. Wayne, first thing I want to say about Fox News, you gave the slogan, it's fair and balanced. But here's the thing, I've always thought about that slogan. If you got to tell somebody, it's probably not true. If you got to tell somebody that your news, if you got to tell somebody that your news channel is fair and balanced, it's probably not true. Because people normally assume for years, and now we've since known that they were lying then too, mm-hmm. not just Fox, but the news. People always assume that the news was going to be objective. So Fox, they have to actually tell you that our news is objective. And of course, they're the exact opposite of what they are. Just wanted to say that out there, Wayne. But you brought up about
Eric, I mean, unfortunately, they have a viewership, and a lot of Americans buy into what that slogan is all about. They feel that they're fair and balanced, you know. And the unfortunate thing is, they were so successful with that in the beginning that they forced progressive operations like CNN and MSNBC to be even edgier. Mm-hmm. Just to counter what it is that they were doing. And right now, you know, you kind of wonder, well, you know, I want to be in the middle. Because there are things that I hear on Fox. I'm not an advocate, and I'm ashamed to even say that for entertainment purposes, every once in a while I'll watch it just to get a good laugh. But I'll hear things that may have a shred of truth in it. And then I've seen exaggerations on the other side. You know, MSNBC, because CNN is now suddenly out of the picture, where they go to the extreme left, you know. And I know that the Latino Journalists Association had to beat up on them the other day because of somebody on MSNBC, one of their hosts, donned a Mexican hat, sombrero, and was starting to you know, basically make fun of the, I don't think it was done intentionally, but, you know, the way it was interpreted that Latino journalists and Latinos at large found it offensive, and you'd never think that that would come out of a progressive organization.
Wow.
You know,
and
so,
it wasn't,
you know, I mean, it's all about the ratings, really.
Yeah, that's true. And it's also about, really, you know, I'm kind of thrown about you watching Fox, Wayne, but that's okay. Check your
I said I do it for to entertain myself, not necessarily get any factual information.
You have to know what your enemy is doing.
I got my eye on you, Wayne.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got to check your card at the next meeting. But I know that you are. I know you are our spook who sat by the door over there. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I will. You will never see me, you know, participate in any. I've turned down opportunities to be on Fox. And, you know, I had a war of words with Bill O'Reilly once about maybe 10 years ago now. It escapes me. But it had something to do with Kobe Bryant, the controversy, and the fact that, you know, he was to have allegedly raped a white girl somewhere in Colorado. I don't know if you remember that going back a while.
Sure.
And, yeah, O'Reilly was of the persuasion that, of course, he did it, you know. I mean, just because he's Kobe Bryant doesn't mean that he wouldn't be attracted, you know, and do something. And obviously, you know, an act of violence of sexual nature is not anything to do with attraction or love. It's violence, you know. And I refused because I was back and forth with O'Reilly on that in the newspapers. I would, at the time, David Hinckley used to write a column for the Daily News with use my comments, I would say, on the air.
He still does, doesn't he?
Oh, he's still there. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, wasn't aware.
But
know.
To your point, Wayne,
but,
I mean, journalism at its best should be, you know, informational, educational, and provocative, with the end and desired, I think, result causing and requiring people to think for themselves and
right.
find out what's
yes.
right.
Yes.
So
I
applaud a certain amount of provocation, ignorant as the references
mm-hmm,
from which
right.
it comes
right.
may be, but, you know, other media does not encourage people to say, and once you hear something, you know, go do some research. Go listen to
well,
C-SPAN. Listen.
That's the problem, that they don't
right.
do research.
Well,
and
I'm
Wayne, hold on, I'm just messing with you about Fox, because
yeah.
I tried to watch, too, and it's just to be open-minded, even Glenn Beck. But when
right.
It's usually a short amount of time
mm-hmm.
yeah.
before they go so left on you, or I call it a hard left, they go out to left field, and then eventually they bring it around to Obamacare, Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
and it is a short amount of time before they start blaming him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I turn off.
Yeah.
I don't mind if you have, like you said, it's good to know different points of view, of course.
Right.
And I try to wrap my mind, let me see what they're really talking about, some of these Tea Party folks and all that. But once they start, when they start going down the path that I've been hearing for 54 years that I've been alive, I don't need to hear that no more.
That's right.
I don't need to hear the constant, you know, the whole thing let's promote the white supremacy, or let's promote, not even white supremacy, just a preferred citizen status over other people. And when
and
you start talking about
worse.
That,
they've gotten worse.
When, yeah, of course. When you start talking about that, that's where I have to draw the line. You know,
yeah.
MSNBC or I mean, because they seem to be a little bit closer to the truth. That's more what I'm talking about. But I've heard them, their hosts exaggerate and have leading discussions where, you know, it was taking that discussion in the wrong place.
And that's why it the reality of it is that democracy is a participation sport.
Exactly.
Because the freedom of speech protects everybody saying whatever they want to say, baseless, soundless, though it may be non-factual and whatever else. But it's the obligations of citizens of a democracy to participate and organize and support their point of view equally to be persuasive.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that's an off the bench on the field sort of thing. It's not
yeah,
you can't
exactly.
sit and unfortunately too much of our society, as far as I'm concerned, and I'll get tomatoes thrown at me for this, I'm sure, spends you know, when you ask people what they do, and they say, "Oh, well, I watched every football game, and then I watched every basketball game," and I said, "Well, how? You know, how, well, I got ready, I got my stuff, and then we talked about it. Then I watched the game for an hour and a half, and I called everybody I knew, and we talked about it for 2 months." So I said, "How many hours is that?" That looks like that's about 2,000 hours.
Right.
How much of that time?
Exactly.
If you put that 2,000 hours into getting with some people to solve the problems we have, rather than sit on the bench and watch some other people for 100 hours a quarter make millions of dollars that you don't get any participation in, wow, would we be doing better?
Yeah.
And you really can't complain. If you don't get involved, if you're not getting involved in issues, you know, for years, you know, people want to complain. They want, and coming from someone whose family's in politics, you know, people want to call up. They want to complain. You know, did you vote? Did you do this? And these are simple things. People want to call up. Well, my father's a settlement, but my water's not working. Well, did you pay your bill? And that's not my responsibility to get your water on, really.
Right.
If you're calling up, so let's have the mentality that our ancestors had, you know, when. Even in the 60s, when African-Americans, there was a certain amount of pride because I almost think because of society was oppressive, we had more to prove. So people dressed a certain way because they were proud of how they looked. It wasn't about having the most money, but what you had, you presented the best image of yourself out there. We don't always do that now. We're too relaxed. My generation after us, that said, you know, when I was... I remember thinking as a young man, well, it will all be all right by the time I get become an adult. Racism will be eradicated. Yeah, I won't have to go on these stupid marches. I can go to the game. I can go here and that. And when Barack Obama became president and people started being all accepting and it's all good now, I got to admit, I became a little nostalgic. I wanted the beef about them against us because it seemed that we were losing our purpose. To me, anyway, everybody wanted to be accepted. You know, sometimes black people, we want to be so accepted. We're happy that we're rappers and we're crossover, and our audience is predominantly white now, as opposed to one time when it was predominantly black. Because black people keep bootlegging our records and the white people keep buying it. You know, so I mean, you know, there's a little bit too much revelry.
Too much progress, huh?
too much progress in being accepted by the other people. Yeah, I'm more focused about being accepted by my own people.
Right.
And if the other people accept me for who I am,
also,
that's great. Also, right. But I'm not going to change my blackness. I'm going to turn up my public enemy that irritates your ears because you have to accept that as much as I have to accept yours. You know?
Right.
So if you're willing for me to accept white Jesus... you got to be willing to accept black Jesus. I won't even slam you with the fact that it's true. Just entertain the notion. That's all I'm asking. And then we'll get on the fact of how you need to know the truth. You know? But this is what I'm talking about. And I'm getting off on, I don't even know where that was going, but I'm just...
it sounded good.
You know, it kind of gets tired.
Well, your point is salient as usual, Eric. You know,
we need to
just think that... Not to cut you off, I just firmly believe that, you know, we have made progress, there have been gains, but I still see so much work that needs to be done. I also see a generation of young folks who have no clue, you know. I mean, I see white kids walking around the streets of Westchester County listening to black rap and embracing each other, calling themselves the N-word. And I'm just saying, well, what progress have we made here? Since when is that acceptable and a term of endearment for people outside of our race to call each other, you know?
You heard white people call each other the N-word? That's progress.
Hey, Mal, I need to bring you up to New Rochelle, man. You want to stay up in front of Iona
for a few
hours?
That's progress, Mal. I mean, I'm sorry. That's kind of progress, Wayne. Mal is, I'm saying Mal because he's kind of shaking his head laughing. That's progress. You got white people call each other the N-word. Doggone it. That's progress. You know? But I mean, yeah. I guess I was going to, that we wanted to, that notion of the flack that Barack Obama was catching kind of jarred young people back into it. Said, hey, you're still black, and there's still people who want to point that fact out to you.
President,
you know. And we've got 1 minute to break. I don't mean to monopolize the conversation, but when I think about people like LeBron James and Kevin Durant, LeBron James, how he came out and spoke about Donald Sterling needed him to go. Mm-hmm. This is a young brother, the star of the NBA, but he's taking an active stance. You would have never seen that from Michael Jordan back in the day during his playing time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't say never, but I kind of doubt it.
Wow.
You know, but
that's,
LeBron
you said, that's
stand,
the second time you said that, Eric.
He took a stand you know? After his height. And then you got Kevin Durant, a young man who gave a great speech yesterday, getting the MVP.
Oh,
it makes you feel good that the future of the NBA is in these guys' hands, you know, as opposed to the old days when it was more of a negative kind of thuggish mentality. So big props to both of those brothers that are going to take the NBA, and I think that it gives it a certain amount of pride to black people that are watching these guys carry themselves that way. We've got to go for a break real quick. We're going to be back on the other side on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne, my mom over there.
Kay Thompson.
And we have Mr.
Mal Wolfo.
And on the phone? On the phone?
That's Wayne.
Oh, Wayne Gilbert. I'm sorry.
My mom, y'all hear my
I thought Mal was going to say something.
Break time. What?
We'll be right back.
Good phone, man.
On Thursday, May 8th, Revolution Books is hosting a major benefit evening featuring a spirited exchange between Lewis Lapham, former editor of Harper's Magazine, and Andy Z, spokesperson for Revolution Books. The subject, Revolution, Lessons of the Past, Urgency for the Future. This dialogue will take place on May 8th at 7:30 p.m. at Revolution Books, 146 West 26th Street, and will be a benefit for this bookstore, which is the center of a movement for revolution. For more information, call 212-691-3345. That's 212-691-3345. Call now. You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Yeah, Mom.
We are back. Kay Thompson Live here with Mal Wolfo with Eric Payne, my son.
Is that your phone making that noise?
That was my. I apologize. I forgot to turn
it off. Okay.
Live with.
You know, I want to talk about
Wayne Gilman.
Wayne Gilman.
Yeah.
Mal sitting here looking like a professor. But I seen a picture. I seen a nasty look nowadays. But I seen an old picture when you were a club impresario. And
five
you were looking
clubs.
A little bit different back in the day.
Clubs.
When you was owning Justine's and all them clubs. And I used to try to Leviticus and we used to try to get into Justine and have to put a jacket on and didn't have a jacket on. But I've noticed nowadays you're very professorial, Mal. And back in those days you were, you know, you had your club.
A little more regular.
A little more regular.
Well, let me say this about let me say this about that. I think I've learned that one as part of becoming a world citizen,
yes.
Mm-hmm. One tries to be most effective in communication by neutralizing resistance by appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. This is my, when I go into New York, I'm safe up and downtown. Because they don't know whether I'm RNC or FOI.
Right.
Right, Wayne? The bow tie will do that. Downtown, you're Republican. Uptown, you're FOI.
Right.
So you say
both. Yeah, right.
So this is my
senior FOI. You don't mess around. Cause you don't have the black bow tie. You got these colored bow ties, though. You get a little leeway.
There you go.
You know?
Here.
Well said. I'm
assuming Mal has a bow tie on tonight, huh?
Absolutely.
Of course.
Okay, all right.
He's clean.
So remember that. RNC, FOI.
FOI, yeah. Well, you're more FOI than RNC, I would say.
Well, you know, those who know me may determine whatever, and those who don't,
well,
that's my advantage.
Those
when
who don't
Mal,
know.
How many Trumps did you and your guys have? You and a group of college guys who got together, right?
Yeah, started in college, actually.
Yeah.
With about $25.
Okay.
Between us.
And how many clubs? What were they?
A few years later, we had five clubs.
Uh-huh.
Leviticus. Five, in fact. Leviticus, Justine, Bogards, Brandy's, Lucifer's, and then Manhattan
Lucifer.
Proper.
Lucifer.
Some of them we changed. Well, some of them we changed the names because we were in there for almost 14, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So Othello became Justine.
Othello.
Orpheus became Brandy.
Uh-huh.
Leviticus stayed the same throughout.
Right.
Bogard stayed the same throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Lucifer's, after a point, we moved across the street to a bigger space, and that became Manhattan proper. And then we had, I developed a partnership nationally, so we had part participation in six more places in Philly and six more in Washington.
Yeah.
And by 1979, after we had a nice five-page article in Black Enterprise, I put together 125 clubs around the world, black-owned clubs.
Wow.
Into,
and that was a circuit.
That was a circuit because we could guarantee corporations that were trying to hit that demographic and psychographic almost 300,000 people a weekend that they could reach in a controlled atmosphere.
Now, just imagine, I'm imagining that network that you had in today's standards of social networking and just how to get, you know, because now people, they communicate with their constituents or their party goers, their clients that go to their parties through, obviously, social network. Or that, they enhance it with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing basically the same thing with global trade and technology, right? Because that's a...
We're trying to notch it up, you know, and what we try to do even with the club thing, the reason we kept opening up new clubs is because as one group got older and their interests changed, and perhaps their needs changed socioeconomically and otherwise, and their entertainment interests, we'd open up something that would cater to them. So the folks that started at 22, you know, 16 years.
Right.
So 22 plus 16. So we kept opening clubs so we would stay contemporary with each group and provide a venue that they found.
And one of the DJs that he used was Michael Thompson.
Okay, our cousin Michael, right.
Right.
But
the cornerstone idea that is often lost is that we were an economic development and redistribution effort. You know, my joy in having done it is certainly in having complacency and being in business. And before we were, I guess, maybe 32 or 33, we had 125 employees, and the average small business owner employs 25 people.
Mm.
But we also created opportunities to give young people of color a chance to do what they did that they could not get in general society.
Mm. Right.
So we had a tourism business.
Right.
We had a fragrance business.
Mm.
We had a graphic arts company.
Wow.
We had five publishing companies, record publishing companies. We had a record label.
So these are other entities through your
that all the clubs supported, and part of the syndication of the concept was you can get in, we will bring our corporate sponsors to you, but you in turn have to take some of your money and reinvest into giving talented young people a chance to do what they do that supports your business.
Mm-hmm.
So the graphic arts companies and the young graphic arts people who would have had to wait till they were 50 in some big house to be creative as opposed to just follow the dots, got a chance to create our flyers and our posters at 23.
I see.
And we could guarantee them an income but we would also syndicate some of our stuff and concept, changing the address and send it off to My Fair Lady in Detroit, or Copper Box in Chicago, or Mr. B's in Atlanta.
Right.
So the main thing was that we think we developed an economic, you know, people going back to Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
We just said we could do that, and we still can.
Yeah.
We still can develop.
Do you know of any groups doing that now? If not, why don't you need something?
Unfortunately, we aren't. What we are trying to do, since you mentioned it, is work with, again, going back to some of the historically Black colleges and universities and talking to the past presidents who are unencumbered by their trustee boards in some cases about using the alumni associations who are unencumbered by the politics of the school to work with business people to talk about economic development initiatives in areas and land adjacent to those schools. Because if you have a school with 5 or 6 or 8 or 10,000 people, a business that opens that can provide some product or service to those 10,000 people,
the
students, and the teachers, and the families of those people.
Helps the community thrive. So you say if you have a Black business close to a Black university that you want to, you know, have them be one of your vendors,
there you go.
Then you're improving the... Mm-hmm. Your,
and by the way, with Internet, why can't my Black business that's in the midst of 4 or 5 historically Black colleges and universities not only have that 15 or 16,000 people buy their products and service, but let the parents of those people who are going to those schools, who might be desirous of supporting that school, buy their product online from me, knowing
that
I'm going to pass on 10 or 15% to that school's scholarship program, because I'm either, you know, it's going to go somewhere. I'm going to pay taxes, or I'm going to put it in something that's tax deductible, and if it's a school and it's not for profit, my contribution keeps my audience. That gets to be customer development. The same way corporations invest in marketing, I'm investing in scholarships to make sure this school stays full and viable, so that my business that's in proximity to the school keeps on going. The synergy is perfect. So we're trying to do that. As you know, there are almost 178 public and private schools. And
that's it. We're going. We're on our way out. Time flies. This has been the K-Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network. My name is Eric Payne.
My name is K-Thompson.
Thank you to Mal Wolfolk and Wayne Gilman. I'm sorry, Mal.
Wayne Gilman.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for having me. Look forward to the next time.
See you guys next week.